and welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. You know, we're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let me know what's going on where you are. Had a nice visit with the Association of Lifelong Learners and Dale Hahn in Muncie recently, talking about Indiana Weekend and one of our favorite topics, which is using some of the basic audio tools, like even your phone, to preserve family memories. If you'd like a speaker for your group to talk about the media, public broadcasting, maybe using some of the new technology, drop me a note or look me up at the university. Had the chance to speak to Rotary, the Exchange Club, the Chamber, various places around the listening area. Glad to visit with your group, so just give me a call. Indiana artisans, some of the state's best artists and masters of handcrafted goods chosen by their peers. To be designated an Indiana artisan, a person has to prove their work is handmade, and the work has to be judged exceptional by a jury of artists. There's a show each spring, the Indiana Artisan Marketplace. It's a two-day event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds celebrating the best in Hoosier art and handcrafted work. Artists display their wares, network with fellow vendors, and get the chance to show their craftsmanship to potential customers. We visited the marketplace filled with amazing products. And soon we heard the sound of a hammer on metal. Dominic Andrasani, a professor of aeronautics and astronautics at Purdue University, with a most unusual hobby, using metalworking tools to produce a variety of beautiful art pieces.
And as I was easing into retirement, I said, you know, what would I like to do? And metalwork came up, and that was about 14 years ago, right? So I started out welding and then blacksmithing, and I've learned the machining. So I use whatever it takes to make the thing that I want to make. This started with an engineering approach to things, but I have to admit, moving from mathematics and analysis to the creative process, you know, the artistic creative process was a dramatic change for me, and I was looking for that. So I try not to be analytical or professorial in my shop. I just like to do it the old way.
You enjoy this?
This may sound weird, but the metal talks to me. So all I have to do is listen, and then the metal tells me what it wants to be. Now, I don't know how that happens, but I'll walk in my shop, and I'll pick up a piece of metal, and it'll say, I think I want to go this way. So I hit it, and if it goes that way, fine. If it goes another way, that's okay too. I just keep hitting it. And whichever way it decides to go, I just go with it. And I'm surprised at how often the metal is right. Now, that's not an engineering approach to anything. And so I'm trying to develop that side of me as opposed to the engineering side, which was quite predictable.
What kind of engineer are you? Aerospace?
Yes, aerospace engineer.
So
aeronautical,
like,
engineer. Yeah, I'm a rocket scientist.
Are you still teaching?
I'm half retired, so yes, I do teach in the spring semester, but not in the fall semester. But I'm about a year away from full retirement, and I tell you, this hobby is really quite habit-forming.
You made all of these things, and you've been doing this for 14 years.
Yep.
Where did that begin? Did it start with a...
No, that started with a Jeep reconstruction project with my son when he was a junior in high school. We needed to weld, and I kept going to the welder. Finally, I said, I'm going to learn how to weld. I went to Ivy Tech, learned how to weld. And then after a while, I said, there's got to be a better way. Because welding is like cutting and pasting. It's like with paper. So I went to the blacksmiths, local blacksmiths, and I said, yeah, this is really nice. They can do a lot more than a welder could. And then I said, well, you know, how about machining? How about, you know, milling machines and lathes? So I've learned that as well. So I can use any of these processes to create things that I see.
We're in such a virtual time these days. People have kind of less contact with real. Does it ever occur to you that you are?
Well, I tell you what occurs to me. To make a piece like this, it takes a lot of time. It just doesn't appear. And I don't think people appreciate the amount of time and energy it takes to make a piece like this. I think, like, if you just go to the store, it only takes a minute to buy something. But there's not much thought given to how it was made. Of course, this is handmade, so it's not like some big giant machine goes ka-chunk and then ka-chunk again, now you have two of them, and ka-chunk again, you have three of them. This takes a lot of time. So part of me wants to do things fast. That's the engineering part. But the artistic part says, just whatever time it takes, just do what it takes to realize the object. And that can be long. And I get impatient. I keep telling myself, calm down. Just keep working it, and you're going to like the result. And that's very different than engineering. Very different. And I've tried not to be an engineer in my own shop. I want to be an artist in my shop. So I don't have to think the same way.
How about the artisan marketplace? When you come here, people are seeing your work, you can interact with.
Well, I'm really quite humbled by the talent that is surrounding me. But it's also, I feel some recognition as well. And it feels good. It feels good to be here and to have people come and say, I really like your work. Sometimes they buy it.
Do you get a lot of sales, or is there some other source of satisfaction that has to come from this?
I get satisfaction with every piece. I really like making the crosses. It's like, that's not work. I don't know why that is. It's just, each one of them is beautiful, and I just like making them. So that's an inner satisfaction. But it is nice to sell them, too.
Dominic Antrasani, semi-retired from his job as a professor of aeronautics and astronautics at Purdue University, recently selected as an official Indiana artisan by a jury of artists. He was at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace at the State Fairgrounds recently. Sometimes, he says, the metal seems to talk to him. Talking with these artists is part of the enjoyment of the marketplace. If you missed the show but want to connect with some of this handcrafted Hoosier work, there's a catalog you can get. It's called the View Book. Information is available at their website at indianaartisan.org, or give me a call and I'll get you that information.
Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver Hammer came down upon her head. Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver.
Indiana Weekend. Interesting people and places from across our region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
We're visiting the Indiana Artisan Marketplace at the State Fairgrounds, a two-day event showcasing the work of 160 top artists from around the state. To be designated an Indiana artisan, a person has to prove their work is handmade, and the work has to be judged as exceptional by a jury of artists. At the marketplace, artists display their wares, network with fellow vendors, and get the chance to show their craftsmanship to potential customers. We talked with Eric Freeman, director of Indiana Artisan.
You would have said it was a fad 10 years ago, but here we are 10 years later and it's still going strong, maybe even getting stronger. And so, yes, people are very interested in who's making it and where are they making it. And the neat thing about the marketplace is not only can you come and see it, but you can actually talk with the artisan who's making it. And that's a requirement to participate in this event. The artisan is here with their work. So, you know, ask how that rug has been woven or that glass vase has been blown, and the person who did it can talk to you about it.
There's a difference between items bought from a store, sometimes with a label on them, from somewhere far away, and these homegrown, handmade products.
John, nobody knows more than you that what adds value to a product is the story. You know, and so to talk with the artisan and to say, you know, how did you weave that rug? And they say, well, my grandmother wove rugs, and you know, my mother taught me. And you know, then all of a sudden, you really want that rug because the value is in the story. And when you need a new rug, you think, I know this person who makes them, and she's in Brown County. And so you go down to Brown County and talk with her again. And I think people like that more and more, to know the maker and to know the story behind the piece.
We met Dominic, the Purdue aerospace engineer.
Yes, Dr. Dominic. You know, what's the chance you've got a PhD who's a blacksmith? I mean, he really is. He's got metal work here. He's got his big anvil, and you can hear it every once in a while. And he told me this morning that several people have offered to buy his anvil. And he said, you know, the anvil, I didn't make the anvil. It's what I use. So, yeah, he's got a great story, too. So some really neat people, really interesting people.
What's new this year?
We have 25 new artisans this year. We jury, I think I said, every May and November. So on any given jury day, we probably bring in, say, 15 to 20 new artisans, so 30 to 40 new ones a year, and 25 of them are here. A couple new wineries are here this year. Wineries are just growing like crazy in Indiana, and we get the very best of those. Dominic just juried in. Dominic is new.
Are there any trends that we're seeing now that maybe we weren't seeing 6 years ago?
Yeah. Funny, I just had a long, you know, as you walk around, all the artisans want to talk. I was just talking with a potter from Elizabeth, which is down along the Ohio River, saying that this might be the last time he comes because he thinks, you know, who knows, that pottery is trending downward. And I said, well, what's trending upward? Because I thought, here's a guy who sounds like he knows what he's talking. Another PhD, by the way, a psychology professor who used to teach at IU. He thinks glass is trending upwards now. So, you know, who knows? But he thinks pottery is going down, and he's been in this business, gosh, 20 years. He's retired now, but he's made clay work for a long time.
Would you say we've seen some uptick in the glass people that you're seeing?
Well, we certainly have seen an uptick in applicants from glass makers, not just glass blowers. There's fused glass and slumped glass, all kinds of glass. And we have gotten more applications from glass makers in the last year and a half than ever before. So maybe so. I was interesting that he said that because we're seeing an uptick in applications anyway.
So if someone misses the marketplace, they can still connect with this work.
Oh, absolutely. Our website is a good place to do it. We have a holiday marketplace in Fort Wayne, which is the weekend right after Thanksgiving every year. This will be the third year we've done that. We also produced the View Book this year, which is a great way to see all of the artisans. There are 322 artisans in 63 counties right now, and only about 160 of them are here. So this is a little more than half. And we created the View Book as a way to illustrate all of the work by all of the artisans, and there's contact information. So all 322 are in there. And we would send anybody who wants a View Book, a View Book.
So there's a national movement to this.
There really is, and it started in North Carolina. North Carolina has a program called Handmade in America, which is about 40 years old. Soon after that, Kentucky got into this and had created a program called Kentucky Crafted. Since then, there are others. This is the ninth year for Indiana Artisan, and we're modeled largely after Kentucky Crafted, but a little bit, to some degree, after Handmade in America. So, and since we have gotten into business, I bet a dozen states have called me to say, hey, how'd you do this, and what do you do? It's taking off. It makes a lot of sense. In Indiana, it gives us a way to create a brand that helps define this state by its art and its food. I mean, everyone knows the 500, everyone knows corn, but this is a way to say, here's the great art and the great foods that are coming from Indiana today, and that's what we're trying to do with this brand.
As you're talking to people, are you getting any reaction?
I tell you, the best thing I like, and I've already heard it probably half a dozen times, is people come in and they say, it's like 150 little art galleries. And that is exactly the reaction we want. You know, we put the carpet down, we pay attention to the color of the drape so that the art pops when you come in. And we purposefully select who's right here so there is a wow factor when you come in. But you've walked around the hall, and you have to admit, the wow factor is throughout the whole hall. We could have put anybody in these front booths, because we've selected great artists, you know, ever since we started this program.
The Indiana Artisan Director seems to love his job as much as anybody we've seen.
It was kind of funny. I worked at a public relations agency 8-9 years ago, and the Director of State Tourism was a friend of mine and called me one day and said, would you help me edit a job description? I just need a quick editing job. And I said, sure. So she emailed it over, and it was a 9-page job description, your typical state government, with all due respect to state government. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, who has a 9-page? So it was so much fluff. I could pull whole paragraphs out, which I did. We got it down to about a page and a half. But when I sent it back to her, I said, what is this? And she said, well, it's just something we're thinking about right now. You know, it's not funded. It's just an idea. And why? And I said, because this sounds really fun. And about 8 months later, she emailed me again and said, hey, we're going to do that. Remember that job description? And I said, yeah. And she said, we're going to do that. Are you interested? And I said, yeah, I absolutely am. And so I applied. I got the job. And here we are 9 years later.
Eric Freeman, Director of Indiana Artisan, speaking to us at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace, a two-day event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds celebrating the best in Hoosier art and handcrafted work. He mentioned the Indiana Artisan View Book as a way to illustrate the work of all the artists, and it includes the work of all 322 people in the program. As he mentioned, you can request a copy of the View Book. Contact information is on their website at indianaartisan.org, or give me a call and I'll get you that information.
If I work my hands in wood, would you still love me? You answer me quick.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Jan McCune. I run Sun Valley Studios. I'm out of Muncie, Indiana.
Tell me the story of how you came to do this. And
about 2 years ago, a woman who was head of the art department at Wheaton College was looking to get rid of a centrifugal caster, and I had no idea what to do with it, and I was given it, and I promised her that I would learn centrifugal casting. And I taught myself, pretty much.
What is centrifugal casting?
It's a multi-step process by which I take a natural form, like I can take any dried plant, and I can make a silver model of that.
You're a former teacher, right?
I'm a former art teacher, and after I retired from Marion High School teaching jewelry as one of the things I did, I just started my own studio and worked part-time in my studio, and I've learned a lot of different methods. Every year I learn something new, so this was my new thing that I learned about a year ago.
What you do doesn't come at a Walmart with a maid somewhere else.
Okay, what I do is one-of-a-kind jewelry, where everything is done from start to finish by the artisan. Nothing is purchased somewhere else. In fact, my stonework, I cut all my own stones. I start from sheets of metal and make everything myself. And people appreciate it because it is one-of-a-kind. Yeah, you're not going to find it, you know, when you go to Carson's or Kohl's, you're not going to see what I'm making.
What do people want to know about this?
People are very interested in the fact that I cut my own stones, that Bill and I will go to rock shops on our vacation, and I will get a slab of stone, and then I will come home and cut the stones into shapes. I also get all my metal textured, and then I just start playing around like a jazz person plays around, but I play around with my stones and my metals, and I just match them up and decide what would look good. So everything, like I said, is one of a kind because of that.
That's Jan McCune, a jewelry maker from Muncie and one of the Indiana artisans we met the other day. Also at the show was Chris Krauskopf, who creates expensive handmade furniture, including some beautiful rocking chairs that captivated people who were walking by.
Well, every single piece has a history. It's got a little piece of me in it. So when I build a chair for a customer, they have a connection to the piece of furniture with me.
Why rocking chairs?
Well, I've always loved rocking chairs. I built my first one in, I believe it was 1978 or it was 1979. For my mother, I had a kit and I put it together. I was just fascinated with them and the way they worked, things like that. So I built that one and then I put it away, and I ended up graduating high school and college and went to the Pacific Northwest for 8 years as a scientist in a biotech industry. But as a way to relax, I always built things out of wood for my home. And then one day, one of my coworkers I worked with came to my home. And he's looking around and he says, "Man, where'd you buy all this stuff?" I said, "I didn't buy it, I made it." And he said, "Well, you ought to be making furniture." So that was in 94, and then since 97, I've had my business, and I've loved it ever since. So it's just kind of part of my blood.
I asked about the cost of his work. One of these rocking chairs was just under $4,000.
Each one takes about 8 to 10 weeks to make, each one. And this one is about $3,980, and that's about $3,650 for that one. The cost is arrived at, obviously, the building of them. They take a great deal of effort and labor to make, but the materials also are a factor in there. This walnut and curly maple is more expensive because it's, to get really good curly maple, it's more expensive. It's just a more expensive material. Also, this one has more ornamentation on it. If you notice the runners down here on the bottom, this has three stripes through it, whereas the other one has two. That's more of the standard. This is a little more of an exotic. I've had customers who are very interested in having it made out of Hawaiian koa wood. And Hawaiian koa wood is only found on one island at a certain elevation, and you can't harvest it anymore unless it's blown down by a storm. So a piece of that, one piece to make a chair is about $6,000 for that piece of wood. So to make a chair out of that would, you know, add another $3,000 or $4,000 onto that. But so far he's decided that might be a little bit out of his range.
I wondered how many rocking chairs he had sold.
Well, of this design, this is a design I came up with in 2012, so it's pretty recent. But last year I sold six of these chairs. And this year I've sold one. I think I've got another one or two coming down the pipe and stuff like that. So since I sell a variety of furniture, these are kind of my Cadillacs. I bring these in. And then other pieces I sell, I've sold a dining table or two. I might have a couple at this show interested in the dining table. So there's a variety of pieces I sell, and it's uneven. And honestly, it kind of goes with the economy. When the economy's good, then I have more sales and stuff. And when it's flat, I have fewer, things like that. So it's not an easy way to make a living, by no means, but it's one that I really enjoy and have a passion to do. So I enjoy it a lot.
Chris Krauskopf, a furniture maker. He's from Louisville, but came from Muncie and graduated from Ball State University. We met him at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace, a two-day event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds celebrating the best in Hoosier art and handcrafted work. There's a national movement when it comes to showcasing the work of artisans. It started in North Carolina with Handmade in America, which is about 40 years old. Kentucky, not long after that, began its version, Kentucky Crafted. This is the ninth year of Indiana Artisan, and since Indiana started, about a dozen states have contacted Indiana Artisan to ask how it's done. One look at a show like the Marketplace, and you'd only want to see more of that beautiful work. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft, and all the folks in the front office, including your friends Matt Bloom, Connie Clary, Lori Georgie, Emily Kowalski, Andrea Lutz, John Morgan, Angie Rapp, and Debbie Webb. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.